think how they profit, how people are coming and coming.
So, are there certain things to work?
Like our deputy president, did ask me to say a couple of words about that, award. And then we just linger on that, because as a monk, sort of we were, one thing was that we meditate not to attain things, but to let go of things. Very interesting concept. You see how much we can vanish rather than how many things we can hold on to. And as you vanish and try to be a simple one, still, the more simple you are, the more people get interested in what you're doing. It's a strange thing. So why? Why don't you go and do something with all your education, go and make a lot of money for yourself, get a nice mansion to stay in? But if any of you ever go and see where I live, where I continue to live, my mansion in summertime in Buckingham Forestry is a cave. A very small cave, but just big enough for me. There's a man, would you say, about 3 meters round? 5 meters? Yeah, maybe a bit less than that. And just like a shell, like a hemisphere. That's where I live. It's wonderful because it always reminds me just that I'm a monk, first and foremost. Yeah, you go out there and you do all sorts of things in this world. You know, you write books which inspire people, you go on the internet, which can some help people, and you do so many other things, but the basic part of you will always be a monk. Simple, just what if he's a monk? That's few things in this world. But being a monk or being a nun does not mean you can't make a difference in this world. And so, just coming over here, I mean, you're not supposed to actually show it. If you look at the monks here, how many years have you been a monk now for the summit? 2 years. And I've been a monk 45 years. So, but we don't get different coloured robes. We don't get little stripes on our, like in the army, or you don't get sort of pips on your shoulders, like in the police or whatever. Because that's something which hierarchies and people trying to sort of be better than you. Although sometimes that happens. I think I mentioned a couple of weeks ago, when you are 10 years as a monk, you can call yourself Tara. Many Sri Lankans know that you call them Ajahn Brahm Tara. So Tara is saying you're 10 years as a monk.
When you're 20 years as a monk, you're actually called Mahatera. This is official from the time of a long time ago. But after 20 years as a monk, there's no other promotion. So I thought, this is not good enough, we should change this. So after 30 years as a monk, you can call yourself, if 20 years is Mahatera, 30 years must be Megatera. And 40 years, what's the next one up? Gigatera. So that's me right now, Giggletera. Not Gigatera, but... well, we don't sort of flaunt that at all. So when you actually do get an award, sometimes my tendency is always to make light of it, to make jokes about it. And the joke today, and I must admit, I heard this on a radio show about 50 years ago. I don't know if anybody knew the Goodies TV series, and before that there was a radio show called I'm Sorry, I'll Read That Again, which was when I was a student, a precursor to Monty Python. And there they made the joke, what do you call an earl, like one of these lords in UK, what do you call an earl who is awarded an OBE? An earlobe. So I tried to make joke without sort of, you know, being denigrating all the sort of the hard work and all of the stuff which other people who get awards. I did get an MA from university, so I've also got an AM now from the honours list. So what does that make me? Ma'am. So the right way of address is Ma'am Brahm. No? Okay. Well, anyway. But, so they always want to make light of it. But then again, just something happened many years ago when I was given another award by John Curtin University, the Curtin Medal. And when I got to accept that, this is a long time ago, that you had to give a speech, like you normally have to give speeches, but you know, this was something which actually got me really focused on an important matter in our modern world, and just a part of psychology which sometimes we miss. Because when I gave my speech, acceptance speech, it went something like this. I'm very honored and flattered to be given this award, but I don't really deserve it. There's so many other people in the community who work much harder than I do, and I couldn't have done all this without all of the people who help me and look after me, or the support group. You can't do this by yourself, you're a team. But nevertheless, thank you very much. I know that's the sort of unusual way people receive an award. So, the next year, I decided to go for the following John Curtin Medal winner, which happened to be, I think, Professor Joffe from Charlie Gardner's Hospital. And I think Anusha, he got him to give a talk last year during the Laser Tree. And I think that's where I got to know him. But when he gave his acceptance speech, the year after mine, I was in the audience listening. And apparently what he had done, he was the head hematologist at Charlie Gardner's Hospital. A lot of times dealing with people who had cancers and other blood diseases like leukemia. And he was a scientist, a top scientist, a professor. And he noticed something which other professors hadn't seen. And what he had noticed was that many people going to Charlie Gardner's Hospital got excellent chemotherapy, radiation therapy, surgery, whatever. But when they left the hospital after some very challenging physically and emotional treatments, they went and went straight back home. There was something which was missing there, some caring. And so what this fellow did, he managed to use his authority and position to actually to kick a few people out of rooms in that hospital. I remember talking to some of these people, he kicked me out of my room, but he needed the space to start something called alternative therapy. Homeopathy, Reiki, acupuncture, naturopathy, every pathy which wasn't taught in the hospital except for psychopathy. That's a joke. But anyway, it was alternative stuff. The stuff which at that time most doctors would call unscientific. Where's the evidence? Show us the results. But he said, no, I know that this is important. So anybody, I think it was, give credit where it's due, I think Brown's Dairy at the time was sponsoring this in Perth. But at the time, everybody could go into that alternative therapy centre after they'd done all these other usual procedures for free. Whether acupuncture works, whether Reiki works, whether reflexology works, I know from my own understanding of how the body works, somebody being kind to you for half an hour, or even longer, an hour. Somebody just massaging your feet, whether it works or not. Scientifically, I know kindness and caring does work. Somebody is spending 1 hour, half an hour, just with you, talking with you, looking after you, making sure that you're all right. That compassion is a powerful. And so, you know, he said, because of that, you know, he stuck out, he put his reputation on the line as a scientist. He got a lot of criticism from his peers. He'd gone wacky. And nevertheless, he stood his ground, stayed there, and of course, he did the follow-up research results. There was a significant increase in people's health outcomes. Those people who visited that alternative therapy center in the middle of Charlie Gardner's hospital. And they said that was why he got awarded his John Curtin Medal. And I was sitting there thinking, wow, this is amazing. No, that's a hero. No, he's, because, you know, I've worked a lot with people with cancer, and just you notice how devastating that can be, how frightening, how painful and challenging that could be. And here's somebody who was actually in a position of authority, who was actually doing something to make it a little bit better, actually a lot better. And I thought, wow, that's a hero, such an inspiring story. So then he went up to the microphone to give his acceptance speech. I don't know why you've given this award to me. There are many other people in the community who do much better work than I do, and I couldn't have done this without the help of all my staff. Or something like that. And when I heard that, I said, hey, that's my speech from last year. And that's when I realized that so many people give the same speech. May not be in an award ceremony, but maybe someone at work says thank you. Or someone who volunteers for the Buddhist Society of Western Australia. And we go up to you and say, thank you for your service. Thank you for doing that little bit extra for us. So, oh, no, it's not me, it's just, you know, just... And it was where I started understanding, why is it that people are afraid of receiving praise? And somebody wants to praise and say, oh, no, it's just, you know, what I do, I just, it's ordinary. Other people in the community, no. I realized when I heard the accolades for Professor Jofi, I thought just for a moment, maybe I deserved my award. And that was actually quite a revelation. Because I was always taught as a kid, don't be proud of yourself. Always sacrifice yourself. Don't ever feel good about yourself. If you feel good about yourself and receive praise, you get a big head. Not true. If you receive praise, you don't get a big head, you get a big tummy. It's only a joke. Come on, you're allowed to laugh. You know, in many religions, you're not supposed to laugh. But here, I will stand up for your right to laugh. I'll protect that right and defend it to the last cough. But anyway, you know, I only cough when I get excited, especially I've noticed, because I'm very mindful. I'm fine, I don't really cough, except when I laugh at my own silly jokes. Anyway, you've seen that happen before. Anyway, so I realized that sometimes it's teaching us that when, you know, someone says thank you to you, you know, thank you, Abby, for writing that cookbook, which, you know, we, and going to all that problem, she wrote a cookbook for raise funds for the Buddhist Society of Victoria, you know, with a few other people, but, you know, you were the main suspect. So, and other people do wonderful things, you know, which they help out with. Why is it that when somebody praises us, no, it's okay, it's not, but when somebody criticizes you, you are late. You made a mistake. You just didn't do it properly. We remember that as an, oh yeah, I'm sorry. Oh yeah, I was just a bit tired this morning, I didn't get up. Why is it that people accept criticism so easily? But praise, we just don't know how to accept. And so because of that, that's when I received that medal. I thought, wow, yeah, maybe. Stand back away from yourself, Ajahn Brahm. Be sort of objective. Maybe I did deserve that. And the same way, the honours list, just for the 10th of June this year, you know, getting a sort of recognition. When I first receive that notification, they don't just, anyone who says it's a surprise, it's not a surprise. You get a note first of all, do you want to receive this or not? It's about a couple of weeks or 3 weeks or 4 weeks before they give it to you. And so you get the note, and then the next thing is, you know, you think about it. Do I deserve this? And also, I'm really good at having good monks like Venerable Sado and other monks like Ajahn Bhamani who keep me in line. If ever I get proud of this, they say, you know, kick me up the bum. Remind me, I'm just a monk. So that's really important because certainly in Buddhism, it's one of the things which even the Buddha just kept on talking to, just kept on mentioning, gains honor and fame, gains honor and fame. Just because, you know, you get sort of well known in the world, don't take it personally. And I'm just going to go on a tangent here. I told this to the monks that there was this one time when I went, I think it was to Singapore. The very first time I gave a really big talk, about 2,000 or 3,000 people. Imagine that, just, you know, not with a support band or backup or anything, just one person going up onto the stage with about 2,000 or 3,000 people. That was in the Suntec Convention Center. And I thought, what am I doing here? I'm a monk, not a rock star. What am I doing this for? And when I sort of stopped a little while before I was actually going to go onto the stage, you know what I thought? I thought, this is not me. I'm a monk, but I'm not giving the talk. My teacher is giving the talk. The teacher who trained me, an Ajahn Chah, a great teacher, it was because of all that he instructed me in, all his advice, all of his criticism sometimes, and all his encouragement. It was just Ajahn Chah giving a talk. And now I took the sense of self and personality and ownership away. And that was really, really helpful. I was doing this because this is just what a Buddhist monk does. And it's not me, I don't own this. And so I keep on doing that, never feeling that somehow that I'm better than my teacher. I'm just, if you like, just continuing on where he left off when he passed away. So anyway, nevertheless, just when you do receive these awards, it's for something. When I received the notification that they were considering it, I looked at it. You know what pushed me over to say, oh yeah, I think I should accept this? And I couldn't tell anybody. You know, it's one of these things, confidentiality. And it was really strict. Even that time when sometimes people think that living in a monastery is so boring. But a few years ago, we found out, it's actually one of the head policemen from, I think, the Peel district, came out and wanted to speak to me. He wasn't dressed in any uniform because this was hush-hush, very secret. He said, they've managed to find out the most wanted criminal in the whole of Western Australia was camping out in the land right next to Bodhinyana Monastery, in that big hill, which you see if you go up Kingsby Drive on your right-hand side before you come to the monastery, in there, the most wanted, and he was armed. He was dangerous. And he came up to me and said, would you mind, because you've got this beautiful wall in your front, would you mind if we use this as a staging place for the tactical response group, like the equivalent of the SWAT team? And he said, well, you know, yes, you know, for public service, I suppose. But he said, I cannot tell you any more, but in the next 3 or 4 days, you know, we'll be going there. You probably won't even notice we're there at first because we'll be highly trained. We'll be going in our black uniforms, you know, with, you know, guns and stuff, you know, serious stuff and helicopters, because the guy in that hill over there is extremely dangerous. And he said, you must not tell any of our monks. You know, I was the head monk, so only you can know this. So I had a meeting of the monks. And I said, something's going to happen in a few days, but I can't tell you what. And it's terrible, you know, to try and keep secrets. But you've got to tell us, we're monks. I can't, but look, if you hear any strange noises, I couldn't even say it was gunfire or helicopters, anything strange, out of the ordinary, get into your hut and hide. Stay in your huts, lock the doors. And you know, it was actually really good advice. They didn't tell me at the time, but that sort of criminal, he was actually bald. And the helicopters from above, if any of the monks had gone out and just investigated, they may have got may got shot or sort of captured or something. But anyway, obviously, I really had to sort of be quite firm and said, no, I can't tell you, but you must, we're monks. I can't, but you don't trust us, I can't. So in the end, that they, one afternoon, I heard the sound, and of course, it's always one monk. I'm going to investigate. No, you stay here. So it's quite firm. But fortunately, it was all over in a few seconds. They didn't even have to shoot any bullets. Actually, what happened was that they went in there and they hid behind the bushes. They waited for a few minutes, and he came out to take a, you know, to urinate, to leak, you know, have a leak or whatever it was. So they literally caught him with his trousers down. Literally. And so, you know, he couldn't fire any guns there. But he had guns in his room up there. So anyway, that's the exciting life of a monk. But, you know, sometimes it's really rotten. You can't tell secrets. I couldn't tell anybody. So he had to just, you know, not discuss it, make up your own mind. And what really turned me to say, yeah, this is a good thing to do, not because of being a Buddhist, service to Buddhism, gender equity. And that was in the citation. And it was because... And it's a good timing. 10 years ago, we did the ordination for bhikkhunis. Whenever you go to Dharamsala or you see the nuns here, you know, I'm mostly responsible for that. Because there wasn't any equity in the Theravada Thai Buddhist Sangha. Bhikkhunis just could not be. You could have nuns in Thailand wearing white, sometimes 10 precepts at most, but not sort of the full ordination. And that was allowed in the time of the Buddha. There was nothing prohibited it. It's not as if you had to invent a wheel. The wheels were already there. They just fallen into disrepair. And so we had these four beautiful women. I don't mean sort of attractive, they were bald, but really good candidates, as many of you know. And there's still bhikkhunis. No, Ajahn Wayama is not so well. She's over in, I shouldn't really tell where it is because she wants to keep quiet. And there's also Ajahn Niroda, she's over in Sydney. And we've got Venerable Seri is with looking after Ajahn Wayama. And Hasapanya is doing a really good work over Dharamsala. Four women have said, can we become bhikkhunis? Why not? Why not meant, you know, that you had to face this inquisition? I was called after the ordination to go to Thailand. Didn't know what was going to happen. So there's about 200 or 300 monks there. And they asked me, what did I do? Why did I do it? And I often say this. This is sometimes, please, you know, follow your heart and integrity. Never take the easy way. Because the easy way was, after 3 hours of talking backwards and forwards, they said, if I disavow those four bhikkhunis, if I say they're not bhikkhunis, then all be forgiven, be business as usual. And I knew it was going to be a lot of problems. I'd be losing many of the friends I grew up with, many of the people I still respect. I count as they helped me so much in my early years of monastic life. A whole tradition. And I said, no, you can expel me. I'm going to stand up for those four bhikkhunis. It has to be. And you know, I was surprised just how, when you think of such a decision, which does change your life, and just how that sometimes you just don't make it just... heedlessly. You really think about it, first of all, but something came up in me where you have to keep your integrity. And also, I will come back and I will face those four women bhikkhunis, I'd have to face all the friends here, all of the lay people of Buddhist Society in West Australia, everybody who, you know, you're a leader to. You can't let them down, no matter what you have to sacrifice. And I did that, and it was very difficult, you know, for many years. So I thought, wow, that is something worth being awarded a medal for. It is something you've done. You've actually moved things forward. There's still a lot to be done in equity, but nevertheless, still more to be done, but you've made a big start. And I think that's what our life is there for, to make a difference. The medal is nothing, but why it was worth, why it was awarded, I think that was something. So we can just move this world forward. Now religion, you know, good religion has got a purpose in this world. That's why still many people look for it, for some moral guidance. But if the guidance is not moral, in a sense, it does not really sort of address people's needs and causes many problems in this world, then there's something definitely wrong with it. So hopefully, that in a place like the Buddhist Society in Western Australia and all the other places which, you know, can have some influence in this world, you can make a better world. First of all, as soon as there's like equity, and equity means equal access, and people can become a woman, a monk, sorry, people can become a monk or a nun, they can leave if they need to, they can change their genders if they need to. If that's how a person really needs to have happiness. And it's not just that equity. There's been many times when things have happened in this world, especially here in Perth, you think, you can't let this keep going on. And that was several years ago, and I will never forget this. It was called Queen Anne Hospital over in Maylands. I keep on changing its name, but I think you know the hospital I'm talking about. Giving a talk there, and this elderly gentleman came up to me, and what he said was one of these daggers to my heart. And he said, religion has been very cruel to the gay community. He was a senior gay member in Perth, and he said it was such pain. I say, there's something wrong there. So and from that time, you tried to support as much as you possibly could, sort of gay, lesbian, LGBTQIA plus, because it, you know, you can't put everyone in one box. Those boxes have to keep expanding. The uniqueness of human beings. Not just that, for prisoners, to take the stigma away from them. That's just wonderful examples of standing up for people. And just seeing just their beauty. Just, oh, this always comes up to me and just with almost just emotions. Because I don't mind. As a Buddhist monk, we try and get rid of the negative emotions like fear, guilt, anger, jealousy, all the things which are negative emotions, yes, you sort of let them go. But the positive emotions, you cultivate. Now, when I was a young person, I thought, oh, all enlightened beings, they just sit here just like robots, like artificial intelligence with no emotions. I don't know why that came from, because that's not sort of how I saw an Ajahn Chah or any of these other great monks I had the privilege to live with. Well, as many of you know, His Holiness the Dalai Lama, just very funny and very engaging. So it's not you without emotions, you cultivate the positive emotions. And I remember this time just going into Karnak prison farm, and this prisoner, he came up to me and he just grabbed me by the arm and pulled me to the schoolroom. He needed to show me something really important. And what he showed me, just he started crying and weeping. You know, tears were coming down his face. Because what had happened, you know, some of you know the story, what had happened was he was the drug dealer, you know, put in prison for for that terrible thing which you do, you know, selling drugs to others. And he was coming towards the end of his sentence, and towards together with another person, another druggie, he was invited to a nearby school, primary school, by the principal, to teach the children about what happens to you if you get involved in drugs, non-medicinal drugs. I won't say the name of the school or the principal, because even today, people will say, what are you doing bringing convicted drug dealers into our school when they're supposed to be in prison? But this principal, no, just sadhu sadhu to her wisdom and her courage, that she wanted to do something to help, you know, kids, you know, these are not high school kids, avoid drugs. And there were drugs in the primary schools. Don't know how they get in there, why they get in there, but there was there. And so she wanted to do something. She could get the professor of psychology to come in, you get the police to come in, you can get the sociologists to come in, people who've studied at university and know that much about what it's really like. You know, they're just intellectuals. But she decided to try something different. Get a prisoner who's actually been caught, convicted, lost his family, lost so much, and actually be in front of the children, really teaching them from the heart, with emotion, with feeling, what happens if you get involved in that world. And I know it, how much it worked, because we had all this, you know what you do in schools, primary schools, afterwards in art class, you put little thank you notes, little cards they draw. And I still remember some of those cards. Dear Nick, thanks for coming to our school. We'll never take drugs, never, ever, ever, ever. Signed, Caroline. You know, well, no, thank you. Please come and visit us when you get out. Signed, sort of John or something, 8 years of age. And had all these wonderful cards. He'd obviously really touched them because he was real. It wasn't theory. Someone had really suffered because, you know, of that stupid thing which he had done. And he was crying his eyes out as he pointed a card after card. I think I shed a few tears as well then. Because, number one, it was so effective. You know, there was no backup story to it. There was no sort of research done afterwards, but I'm sure many of those kids were highly moved and impressed by someone who'd been there, suffered, and was in jail at the time. And for him, for a prisoner, just how therapeutic. You could actually do something to help. Pay off some of your guilt to help somebody else. What a wonderful thing that would be. What a wonderful opportunity. And those are the sorts of things which, you know, literally is thinking in a different way outside the box to make a difference in this world. And if anyone does that, that's why that, not so much that Nick, that principal, if ever I knew her, she should get not just an AM, but sir, call her a dame or whatever. Because, you know, done something which is wonderful. Because when you do things like that, it is something which is inspiring. There are too many people who do great work, and I'm sure there's many people here who have just really gone way past what is expected of you in life, going to visit, help, do stuff, and it's inspiring. So when you give some recognition, it actually gives a voice to goodness in this world. It gives a platform where people can say, wow, there is a huge amount of goodness in this world, inspiring kindness. A lot of times people do amazing acts of generosity and kindness and compassion, which costs them. But it's still happening every day, many times a day, many places in this world. So if we keep it covered up, what happens in this world? Oh, it's a hopeless world. We're going to sort of, you know, it's just a dog-eat-dog world. It's just so cruel. Because that's what we see in the newspapers. That's what we see every week in the on the negative things which happen: corruption, inaction on climate change, people doing nothing, just out for themselves, just scamming people right, left, and center, just mistreating the aged and just scamming them because they can't fight back. There's so many places in this world we can get so depressed, but you find some good news and it inspires us. It's good things happening and it encourages more people to do good. So that's one of the reasons why we have these little ceremonies. And if I'm in town, if I possibly can, whenever that John Curtin Medal ceremony comes up, I always get an invite. And sometimes even I'm busy on retreat, supposed to be meditating, I always try and make a point to go there. Because some of the stories are just so inspiring about what people do in this world. How kind they are, how they go that extra distance for other people. Unfortunately, sometimes we forget that. The goodness that exists in this world is huge. And sometimes you've done a lot of good. If anyone says thank you to you, you should say, yes, I deserve that. And I often mention that because after that John Curtin Medal, we say, yes, I deserve that. People, they get a big head. You arrogant, good for nothing. But no, if you accept praise, what that does, it never ever gives you a big head. It gives you more motivation to do good again and again and again. So, any of you who've got your partner sitting next to you, or you see your partner later on this evening, when they do something good, even a small amount, for goodness sake, praise them. Say, thank you, darling, that's a wonderful thing you did this evening. Thank you, I just really appreciate that. Instead of just always criticizing them, you're lazy, you did clean up your room, you were late, you left the toilet seat up, or whatever. For goodness sake, just praise people. Now we get to our kids. I noticed this myself. When I was coming back from a talk at a school, I think it was over the old Scarborough Beach High School, which was had its beautiful views over the beach. There's an incredible school to actually grow up in, if ever, long time ago now, but the state government sold it, moved the school because it was worth much more real estate. So anyway, I won't go into that. But anyway, coming back, I was on a bus, had a little bus ticket, and sitting next to two schoolgirls going home after the day at school. And I was eavesdropping on them. It was not for trying to harm them, but I was just trying to listen to what girls actually say on the way back, sitting next to their best friend. And it was maybe about half an hour before we got to the Perth bus station. And I will never forget this. These are best friends. And one of them said, you've got flat breasts. No boy will ever go out with you. But you've got a big nose. You can't expect any boyfriends. And it was some criticism all the way home from school. If any of you can relate to that, and that's sitting next to your best friend, let alone sitting next to an enemy. When I was a kid at school, with my mate, we passed two girls, and he would say, well, I don't like yours. It was just always put downs. And so, after that, I realized that our poor youth, they get criticism from their friends. In the playground, they get criticism. They get criticism from their teachers. Never good enough. You can do better. Get criticism from our parents. Come on, you can get straight A's this year. You only get 9 A's and a B. Do better. Sometimes that's how it feels. People are trying their best, but it's never, ever good enough. You can always do better. So always get criticism. And after a while, you can see where that leads to. so much criticism, always being told off, that, you know, we get depressed. Negative, we don't want to try anymore. Now, even that, trying that with the West Australian Police Force, because they realise giving people fines for speeding, just fines for parking wrong, fines for just running the lights, it's just so negative, and people just, you know, realized, just found out where the police car was, where the speed traps were, and avoided them. So instead they tried positive reinforcement. So what they would do for a while was actually, if they followed a driver and the driver was keeping all the rules and doing things correctly, you know, for quite a while, they would pull them over and give them a reward. Positive reinforcement. So this one fellow, sort of, you know, was driving along, and this police car started flashing, so what am I doing wrong? And the police car pulled him over. And he said, I haven't done anything wrong, Sergeant. He said, no, you don't have to worry. I've been following you. You have been driving perfectly, letting other people in front of you, just slowing down at the lights, everything. And I'm glad to say, sir, that I can give you $100 check, you know, for your wonderful driving. But he said, I think $500, I think it was. $500 for being a good driver. We try to praise good drivers, positive reinforcement. But he said, just for our records, you know, congratulations, sir, here's a check. Now, can I just ask you how you'll use this? He said, wow, with $500, I can apply for my driving license. So that's where they stopped it. But anyway, positive reinforcement does usually work instead of the negative ones. So if somebody praises you, say, oh, thank you, officer, thank you. And we're going to use it. Well, I'll think about that later on. But thank you. So so anyway, just there is a lot of positive energy. And you come on and you focus on the positive, and it uplifts you. It uplifts your health, your happiness, your social cohesion. If you're in a place where people criticize you all the time, put you down, you're terrible, you're hopeless, you're not bowing the right way, actually, maybe you should stop that cough, stop it now. That's terrible, which we receive in this world. But instead of positive reinforcement, the kindness, the goodness, and focusing on the goodness, it makes for a much better world, a good world, a great world. So anyway, that's just about please. Whenever anyone praises you, they give you any sort of award or certificate, no matter what it is. You know, once, I never understood about these things. I remember just going home to visit my mum once, and I will never forget just how awful I felt afterwards. Because I came home, I was a monk for about 6 or 7 years, and she had my degrees from Cambridge, a BA and an MA. Okay, it was science, but everything is arts. And she was at the table. So she said, oh, here's your certificates. What do you want me to do with them? I'm a monk, I don't need these. And I tore them up. Tore them up and threw them in the bin, the trash can. I thought, oh, that's renunciation. Yeah, I'm a monk, you don't worry about awards and certificates and stuff. You know, you're a monk, you let go of all that worldly stuff. My mother never said anything. I went to meditate in my room, and an hour later I went inside, I think, to get a cup of tea. And there she was on the kitchen table, had all of the certificates rescued from the trash can, put on the table, gluing them painstakingly together. I felt so terrible. Yeah, it didn't matter to me, but it certainly mattered to my mum. And I thought, I should never ever do that again. So maybe any awards don't matter to me. They certainly matter to other people. Feel proud of a Buddhist society in West Australia who actually is, you know, trying to make gender equity. Great monasteries for women. Not just ordaining them, but making sure you keep on going, training them, nurturing them, getting monasteries for them until they can be totally independent. Until you can't see the difference between a bhikkhuni and a bhikkhu. The gender is not important. Until the LGBTQIA A plus community. They're treated as if there's no reason to discriminate at all. Everyone is welcome. And so people who have the stigma of diseases, the stigma of they've been in jail, the stigma where we try and stigmatize people for this, that and the other, they can all feel welcome. The trees in the forest, where every tree in the forest, no matter how crooked, how damaged, can always have a place they can come to called the forest, where they always feel they belong. Doesn't matter what gender, or even what religion, or no religion, you can feel that you're welcome, accepted, the door of your heart fully open to whoever's in front of you. And may that be a way forward in our world. So much we can do. Just need that inspiration. So anyway, that's the talk for this evening. Is that okay? Very good. Oh no, that is really depressing. As I say, if you can do sadhu, really get into it. Okay, 1, 2, 3. Sadhu. 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 Okay, so we've got any questions from the floor first of all, then yeah, okay, hi.
Hi, I'm just wondering, when you talk about accepting praise, what's the difference between that and humility?
If you're humble, what's the point of being humble if no one knows about it? That's only a joke. The point of being humble, well, what is humility? Humble. You know, a lot of that is, please excuse me, comes from that Judeo-Christian tradition, where only Jesus or God, you know, is high. And we have to be just really low. Almost like it's almost like a psychosis, thinking you're not good enough. And again, please excuse me, I can say this as a male, but women always take that on worse. You know, the original sin. The guy was not involved. You know, he got away with it scot-free. But women, why is that? Why do people feel that humility, when it's really guilt, is a badge of honor? So whatever good qualities you have, share them. And then what happens is those good qualities grow. If you always have to be humble, then it's a race to the bottom of humility. I'm more humble than you are. Nah, 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 nah. I'm hopeless. I'm terrible. You know, there's never any person I've met in this world who's hopeless, who's terrible. That's one of the things which, you know, I often say, that going to prisons, going to cancer wards, going to sort of homes for the, I can't say this anymore. What are you saying? I'm mentally different, emotionally different. That not just with disorders. It's not disorders, it's just difference. And so that I've never seen anybody who's not just this, you know, shell of maybe a lot of bruises and hurt, but underneath all that, inside, gorgeous beings. I just say, with that Nick the drug dealer, inside was an amazing person. You know, afraid, guilty. I don't know why he, you know, what got him into bad company or just greed. But beneath all of that, give the chance, give some sort of seed which that principal of a school did. And he just blossoms. He bursts out with amazing sort of emotions. Really good ones. So don't be humble. Be proud of who you are. You know, show your goodness and your kindness. Why not? Okay, yeah.
Yeah, you said that there was, with the ordination of women, you come across a lot of opposition in other countries.
Yeah.
I'm just wondering if the things you've done in this country have inspired those people to do anything over there?
Some. It's happening, but it's too slow for my comfort and for your comfort. It's a case of why not? But it's as much as we can do over here. We just make sure that, you know, this is well known and it's successful. And you know, after a while, that ideas get exported. It's West Australia, it's not, you know, please excuse me, it's not the centre of the world, it's not New York or London or Sydney or something, but it's a start. And little by little, when they see it works, and it, you know, it's a fantastic, and it's, and even now just get an award from the government or from whatever, they say, it's, wow, you know, this is amazing, why not? An experiment which was very successful. Just like, you know, you just see the criticism which Professor Joffe got for being unscientific. But it worked. That's scientific as far as I know. So we go there and do that extra little bit. Never say it can't be done. Stopping climate change? Of course it can be done. Take sacrifice. So all these little things which, you know, we're really concerned about. Rather light a candle than complain about darkness. Those old sayings. Don't go negative, complain, oh, it's rotten. Government's corrupt, the government. Go stand for a political party or something, a good one. Don't just complain about politicians. How about doing something about it? Whatever. Anyway, that's the sort of stuff which we can do. Okay, got some questions from overseas. A lot of times people don't act because of fear. They fear what other people say about them, fear of consequences, but worth doing. Green machine from Scotland. Achabab, have you seen a doctor about that coffee? It's been there for more than 2 weeks. You really should. Yeah, I've seen many doctors. There's quite a few doctors in the audience over here. So I see many doctors. It is actually disappearing, not as fast as people would like, but it's actually been there for much more than 2 weeks. But it's going. How can I answer if others ask me about people who I cannot praise? Should I be quiet or say something? Saying something negative sounds critical. And again, sometimes I get sort of... I've never seen anyone who's really bad. And sometimes, if you look at the first book which I wrote, called, you know, The Opening the Door of Your Heart, there's a poem in there which somebody mentioned to me today. The poem about loving your mother. And I encourage you to have a read of that, first of all, before you see who the author was. And it's a very beautiful poem about, it doesn't matter just if your mother is really old and cranky and just keeps harassing you and keeps asking for more and more and more, because the poet said, because there will come a day when your mother will ask no more, where she's silent. So please, now heed her calls with kindness, not with irritation, because one day she will call you no more. It's actually much more moving than that. But if you ever see the name of the poet, I think it was written about 1926 by a gentleman called Adolf Hitler. When I read that, it shocked me. How can a person like that cause, you know, so much tragedy in the world? There's always a good side to everyone. Unfortunately, that never was allowed to come out. Instead, the dark side of him started to grow. But when you see things like that, that really challenges, you know, your judgment of others. And that's not saying that he was a good fellow. He caused so much harm for anybody who was caught up, you know, in the Holocaust. Not just for Jewish people, it was for gays and Romani, Gypsy people, wanderers. Many people got caught up in that terrible, terrible time. Anyway, from Brazil, when others praise me, sometimes I go thinking and fantasizing at how good I am, how to develop joy from remembering our good actions without being conceited. instead of thinking and fantasizing how good I am, prove that you are good by actually doing something. Just thinking about it doesn't get you anywhere. So if I was to praise me, then use that as an encouragement to do even better. Just like the simile of a sports team. In a sports team, if you are, because many Sri Lankans here, they follow cricket. How are they doing, Sri Lanka, in the cricket matches? Not good. Washed out, okay. But anyway, I know that because once I gave a big talk in Adelaide, hardly anyone turned up a few years ago. It was because the Australian cricket team were playing the Sri Lankan cricket team, and then the Sri Lankan temple, they all went to the cricket match instead of come to my talk. But anyway, if you're there at the game and you're shouting them on, come on, great pass, great shot, yeah, great sort of, oh, that's such a marvellous block or whatever. If you get support and praise, does that make your team play better or worse? Of course it makes it play better. But if you're looking at that football team, yeah, you're hopeless. Oh, even my grandmother could bowl better than yours, and she's dead. And you can't hit a cricket ball with a big bat like that. You're hopeless, you're terrible. What does that do? That just, their energy just goes, their confidence disappears, and they don't perform well. So, I once praise you, imagine you just, this is from Brazil, you're playing in a soccer match or something, because Brazil loves soccer. So you're playing in a soccer match, and they praise you, yeah, great pass. You don't sit down and go thinking and fantasizing in the middle of the match how good you are. You just carry on. Allow the praise to make you even better. Don't just sit with it, just take it and move it into sort of good actions, more actions, better actions for the benefit of everybody. And of course, our team is Planet Earth. So, go out there and do something. They praise you, but you don't stop there. That should be motivating you for doing more. Anyway, that's enough for this evening. So now, we're going to bow three times to Buddha, Dhamma, and Sangha, so I can praise the Buddha, Dhamma, and Sangha for wonderful things they have done for me and for others.
Arahant Sammasambuddho Bhagava Buddhang Bhagavantang Abhivademi Suvakato Bhagavata Dhammo Dhammang Namassami Supatipanno Bhagavato Savakasangho Sanghang Namami